Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to All About Guitar with Jeff Floro. I'm Steve Pfister, and tonight we'll all be here turning the tables on our favorite guitar host, Jeff Floro. I'm going to be assisted by an awesome guitar player, JP Durant. Say hello, JP.
Hello, everyone.
And Kathy Lauer. Say hello, Kathy.
Hello, everybody.
So we're turning the tables on Jeff tonight, and we're going to jump in with some background. He's got some awesome guitars, some modified guitars that we're going to look at and discuss all about it and play some clips. But first of all, let's say hello and salute the man himself, Mr. Jeff Floro.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show.
So, Jeff, let's talk about, first of all, what really, this is a guitar show. What inspired you? What were your early influences, and what did you, what got you into this?
Well, actually, early on, I started playing music at about 4 and a half. Okay. I actually started on accordion. When I was a kid, that was a big deal. So, and it affected my playing in terms of how I approached things. My brother started taking lessons, and I would pick up the instrument and play by ear, and they noticed that. And the teacher also noticed that I was learning all the bad habits, which was a key part of my life. Even as a guitar player, I was always doing the bad habits, and I had a struggle to get that change that. But anyway, I started doing that. Early influences, I was a TV kid, listened to movies, a lot of movie soundtracks. We used to play them, and by ear, we would emulate them, like The Magnificent Seven, TV shows like Man from Uncle.
Peter Gunn. Sure.
Well, awesome. It was kind of hard to play that on accordion, but later on guitar, we do that. Secret Agent Man, Mission Impossible, I Spy, of course, the Bond movies, all of that kind of stuff. We would play all those different things. And so that was a big influence in me. And then in 66, 67, a major turn of events, at that time, the Beatles had come out with Sgt. Pepper's, which did affect me. Mm. I remember watching the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, so that was an impact. But one album that really changed my life was Days of Future Past, Moody Blues, and it got me into orchestration, into orchestra music, and that affects how I play, too.
Okay.
I was curious. You brought some guitars, and we're going to go discuss those in a minute, but in those early years, I remember when we did a previous show, you said that you won a Stella,
and I thought that's my first guitar in an accordion contest.
But what was the first really good guitar you had? Is it here tonight, or is
no? It's not here. But if you look at my the picture of me on Facebook, my avatar is me in like sixth grade, and I'm playing this Italian guitar called the Continental. It was a push button guitar with four pickups. It was cool because I was everybody, you know. Somebody might have a Strat. It was only three pickups. I had four. But it was totally 60s. Like, I don't know, in the old days in the car, your radio was push button. Everything was push button. This was all push button. It wasn't a great guitar, but it worked, and it was it sounded great through with a fuzz tone.
First good amp?
Oh, I had the Bandmaster, the Cream Bandmaster. And that was a monster. That was like a stack back then, because all my friends had like deluxes or super reverbs, which was a big amp, but it was still kind of small.
212s in the cabinet?
212s in the separate head.
It's nice. A blonde. What year is that?
63, either 63, 64, I think.
So you didn't buy it right when it came out?
I bought
out.
It brand new.
Oh, you did buy it brand new. Wow.
It blew a pilot. Huh?
Should be noted, he still has that. You
know. Never sell. One thing you will learn tonight, never sell. Okay. These guys hide from me when they sell stuff.
You were nine? You were, how old were you?
When we got the amp, yeah, I was about 10. I was born in 54, so I was 10 years old. 64.
How did a 10-year-old kid know to get a Bandmaster? There were Standells, there were other amps. You
well,
know?
By that time I'd been playing, and then my guitar teacher at the time, his name was Aaron Campbell. He was a guitarist from Louisiana, and he was a big Fender guy. He had one of the most beautiful jazz masters you ever saw in your life, and he knew all the amps, so he kind of guided us.
Okay.
We went locally to KKLE Music. That's where we bought it. Back it was near Knott's Berry Farm. So the only thing that amp was pretty stock. The about a year after the transformer went out, so they replaced it, no charge. And I think about 8 years after that, the pilot light went out, changed that. And only recently I recapped all my Fender amps because they finally went out after about 45 years. So you have to redo the capacitors. Otherwise, they're virtually the same. And that had Oxford speakers in it.
Well, living in SoCal, right? Living in Southern California, Jeff, it was relatively easy to get Fender service?
Fender was. We used to go down there. It's where G&L is now. He's on four, just so you know. I'm trying to bring his level up. Yeah. Four. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so yeah, we would go down there and they would give us free schematics. Of all the amps, and parts were pretty cheap. Usually, like, if you missed a screw or something like that, they would give them to you for free.
Okay.
But it was very cool. We used to go down there all the time, and I started hoarding all the schematics for all the amps.
Nice. So after the four-pickup amazing guitar, the Italian guitar, what was your first?
Well, we also, my brother had a Rickenbacker. It was a 360, I think, three pickup.
Whoa.
It had the front's curved and then it's bound in the back. That's a nice guitar. That guitar we used a lot for sessions and stuff. But those were the main two until 71. In 71, I got this guitar, the Les Paul.
I'll pull it out. I'm sensing a segue here.
I'm sensing it too.
Okay, we're going to hold on.
So this guitar is a 71. I got this. This is a factory Bigsby. This Bigsby came on the guitar. Whoa. Let me bring it up here so you can see it. So, as you can see, there's very little gold left on it. But the guitar back in 71, the necks were kind of chunky. And it was, my friends used to tease me and call it the Louisville Slugger because it was huge. The neck was huge and not great to play. So, I went down to, up to Hollywood. And right across the street from Guitar Center was Valdez Guitars. And Valdez had worked, I knew he had worked on some of Clapton's and Stills guitars. So I took it in there and I asked him, and you won't believe this. So he shaved the neck. He shaved the neck. He took the heel out, so there's no heel.
Okay.
And then he put in the fat frets because it had the Fretless Wonder frets. I'm going to take this off for now. I don't need it. Anyway, so... he put the fat frets, but you can see by this time, even in the 3 years, it started yellowing.
Nice.
I would wax this when I clean it every time, and I thought it was from the lemon wax, but it's actually the nitrocellulose, but it's really yellow. So he said, why don't we just put the cream binding? So he put the cream binding and then adjusted it. And he did another really cool thing. Here's the Grovers. I had Grovers pile on because the other one slipped too much. And there's a shim in here. It's hard to see, but there's a little shim. And he did that because it lowers the pole where you put the string in, and it gives it a little more angle. So he felt that it gave you a little more sustain. And that was unique to him. I've never seen anybody really do that. And this guitar just was amazing. The only thing cosmetically I did was put the cream bezels in this, and then I put the barrel. But everything else is the same. Recently, I had Monique Caravello work on the guitar, and we discovered that all the pickups were out of phase to each other and to themselves. The little
Peter Green action there.
It was totally messed up. So she fixed all of that, and it's totally different. And then she rewired it with the 50s, with the Bumblebee capacitors. It's like a 59. So it gets a lot of squawk. So that's the treble pickup. Sounds much better. Here's the neck pickup. And it gets the woman tone.
That's it.
And then now, when I used to play it, it would be a real kind of a nasally sound. Now it has that. So if I take the overdrive off, the overdrive is off. Oops. So if I bring this down.
Okay.
So it gets that typical, it's more of a traditional Les Paul.
I notice you have the nylon bridge saddles.
That's how it came.
It's the way it came stock, and you don't notice.
It sustains. Well, here, let me use the gain. I'm using for tonight to kind of even out the guitars. I'm using the Solo Dallas Storm, and so you know what my settings are. I have the powers at about 1 to 3, depending on the guitars, because some of the single coils won't have as much gain. The middle control is a compressor. I have that straight up.
Okay.
And then I have the output. Stage fully up. So here's what the
go have a bite.
So if it works, don't mess with it. Exactly. So it works really well. Okay. This guitar. That picture that you saw was before I modified it in the black and white photo that was in the promo. That was me in 71. That's when I got this guitar, and that was on a session I was using that.
Well, so then let's talk a second about collectors versus people who actually play, particularly in that time period. You know, Clapton Strat was a collection of parts, and most, if not all, guitarists who were working guitarists at the time modify their instruments to make it work for them. Now that's kind of considered sacrilege, but people got to remember that you wanted to make it work for you. Right. You shaved the neck on this. You made some modifications to it. And I think you kind of tend to mod all of your guitars. Some people leave them stock. You tend to upgrade stuff sometimes right off the bat.
I wanted to do certain things and be able to do certain things. You have to remember, at the time this guitar came out, and this is not a slam to Gibson's, whole different Chicago Music had them.
Right.
Just like when CBS bought Fender, they quality control took a big nosedive. So there were a lot of problems. The good thing was most of the time they could be fixed, though Gibson's it took more. It's easier to modify a Fender than it is to modify a Gibson. So that was a problem. The neck was chunky. The fretless Wonder frets were like 1 micrometer from the fretboard, you could barely feel them, so I could not bend at all. With these higher crown frets, which were the standards for like the 335 and other the Les Paul standard, there's enough for me to grab so I can hold it. So I can grab it, and that's important so that, you know, I couldn't bend at all before. Mm-hmm. It was easy for cording, but it was designed for a different purpose. So a lot of the guitars were not well made at that time, so we had to modify them. But then things were happening. Things were changing with pickup design, splitting the pickups that came out later. Like Alvin Lee told me back in the 60s, he put a humbucker in the bridge position for because they wanted a little more girth to the bridge sound, and they would do that on their tellies, and that's how that started. And you've seen it, you know, I mean, a lot of guys have mixed, you know, humbuckers with single coils. So stuff like that, and I'll go through, when we go through the guitars, I'll tell you what I did to them and why. This guitar, basically, once I got the neck right, I didn't really do much more with it because it was okay where it was, and it had the sound. And so this guitar was much, after that initial reworking of it, it's pretty much what it is from back then.
Mm-hmm. Two quick questions. Are the pickup covers the original?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
There's not much gold on this still, one.
They look fantastic.
Well, the trick, too, another thing that a lot of guys didn't do, I did, because we were playing every week on the weekends as a band with my brother. So I always went through all the guitars every week. I restrung them once a week, the guitars that we were using. Not all of the guitars, but the ones that we used in the gigs. And I would clean. I learned early on, when you polish the frets up and clean them up and really clean it, you get more overtones, because people would get all this sludge and junk on their guitars. And no wonder it, first of all, it deteriorates the strings faster because it's oxidation and rust. So if your strings are scraping against oxidation and rust, they're just going to rust faster. And then also, too, it stayed in tune better. Once I cleaned everything up and everything, and I had to go through this sometimes because it would get dirty from, you know, you're playing every night, as you know, you're sweating and it just gets gunked up, so you have to clean it up. So that's part of the reason it looks better, is I really did keep an eye on it.
It's in good shape. It's in really good shape.
Amazing shape.
Yeah, it's only been dropped a couple of times. It's been pretty good. But, I mean, like this thing, it's totally worn off all the gold. All the gold's pretty
well, speaking of strings, when you were restringing every week, what gauge did you use?
I tried nines on this for a while.
Okay.
They have tens on here now. And these are Fender 150s.
The Fender 150s.
Now, okay. The reason I use the Fenders is they are the brightest string that I've found in terms of harmonics. And you'll hear it on this guitar, and the Strat have the Fender 150s on it. And it has that, if I, you know. Now, I'm using a solid state amp. I'm not really cranking it. If this amp was really loud, I could probably pull more harmonics because it'll interact with the pickup. But pretty much I can squeal on almost every note on this guitar. So.
Nice.
Did you, you said that you went from this Continental to a Rickenbacker, but at that time period when you were starting, were you a Les Paul person or Strat-identified person, or what really floated your boat there as a 10-year-old?
Well, we were watching what people were playing. We were watching what playing. The Rickenbacker was my brother's, so it was his guitar, and the other one was mine. But in the studio, I would switch around if I needed something. The Rickenbacker was definitely a better guitar. It played better.
Jeff, I was going to ask you, did your choice of what guitar you purchased now and maybe even or then and now, was it governed by what you were doing at the time?
Well, when I wanted to, my dad knew I needed it. I was outgrowing the Continental. It just wasn't cutting it. And when we were playing with other musicians, we saw a lot of different guitars. And when I was in eighth grade, we played at this pizza parlor. And there was a country band that played after us at 10 o'clock because we could only play till 10, child labor laws back then. And this guy had a Trini Lopez 335. It was a beautiful guitar, one of the best necks I've ever played in my life. And so I got used to that. And he liked me playing his guitar because he could go to pedal steel. So we could, you know, we'd sit in with him all night. So I got to play a lot more guitars. And then in the studio, I'd meet other people. A lot of them were using 345s, 335s, the blues guys. And I was doing the R&B sessions. And so I learned more about the guitar. So when it came time for me to get a guitar my junior year, it was either I really liked L5. Is I saw Stephen Stills playing one, and I thought it was kind of cool. But I also I just loved those guitars and the natural finish. They were great. And then I saw this guitar. I think at that time I was just starting to go to the NAMM show. So I had to consider what I wanted to use live, and this thing was designed to be played at higher volume without feeding back so much, so I caved in and got this one instead. So, and it was a different journey. I mean, at the L5s, I, you know, maybe I should have gotten the L5. I could retire after buying that thing. But
although this, you never sell, so that would have been a
true. That's true.
That wouldn't have worked out.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so I ended up getting this thing, and it seemed at that time when I got it, it was, you know, a lot of people were using Les Pauls, but it wasn't. It was starting to really come in to play where people were. Everybody was using it. All of a sudden, it was like the guitar.
What year did you get this?
71.
71. So you were playing this through your time at USC and all that, but you have some other guitars here, right? So.
Well, these guitars are were later. So let me, this is off, right? Yeah, hold that. Let me buzz for a minute. And the next guitar I got was the Strat, but that was in the 80s. And I needed to get that single coil sound. This guitar is a very interesting guitar. It's not a Fender. It's a, it's made from parts. And this guitar, as you can hear the single coil. So this guitar is, I've got the neck first. And this is an ebony neck, B style. So it has more curve to it. There's more of a curve. The radius is like a 9-inch radius. It has its problems, especially up here. I'm a good bender, but some of my friends can bend way over and cancel out. So I had to kind of adjust it. The bridge is kind of flat, and I had to pull it up a little bit, and that kind of fixed the bow, the canceling of the way it cancels.
Is
up
this
here.
A Fender bridge?
Yeah, what is that?
No, this
yeah.
is a Godo locking.
Okay. So is it radiused, or is it?
No, I can adjust flat? These, so it's slightly.
Okay.
It's slightly, but I actually flattened it so the edge strings are higher, yeah. So that it doesn't cancel out.
Okay.
So, and then this is, at the time I made this, you couldn't get the Floyd Rhodes locking nut. You couldn't buy it separately. Everything was like, you had to buy the whole thing. So Allparts made this little tiny one, and it screws into I can actually restore this back to the original nut if I want to.
Oh, okay.
It screws in here. But it's a locking system, and then I have the Schallers. This body's ash, and it's a D-Strat electronic, so I have volume and tone, and then this is a switch that basically fattens up the pickups a little bit. It's like a resistor.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
So for example, here's the, so that's the treble pickup. See, it's a little beefier. And then I have a 5 position. Go through all the pickup selections.
Yeah. Does the resistor work on the other pickups as well, or just on the treble?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good mod.
Is it an active mod? That's not a battery.
Huh?
It's not a battery. It's just a resistor.
It's just a resistor. It's passive. Huh. So, but this is...
That sounds good.
So if I put gain... So I use this. This is the one when I have to do whammy bar effects. I use this one a lot. It's pretty good. The reason I like this better than the Floyd is the metal is more like the original Strat bridges. It sounds more like a Strat. So let me set it up.
Good.
I'm getting more of the overtones.
Did you say those were stock pickups in that?
Yes.
The Strat pick. The electronics is a V-Strat. I don't think these are vintage. It's whatever the V-Strat had.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's their standard
V-Strat?
V-Strat.
Oh, V-Strat.
It was called the V-Strat, and it had this, you know, volume tone and this switch. This pickguard assembly.
What year is that?
I built this in the 80s. this came, I built this in the 80s, but I don't know how long old this neck was. And I lucked out because it was painted like this. And my friend found the body to match it, Burgundy Mist. So I put gold hardware on it because it looked better. And
I remember seeing that guitar, I think pre-gold hardware, or at least pre-Goto, when you were first making it.
I think it had a regular bridge. This was all, Joel Grant worked on this like he did on the 339 and the Tele. He's the one that put this in there, and he set it right. He did it right, so it really works. This one has the, I'm going to turn the gain up again. This one has the Fender strings, and that's for... So it gets all that high-end stuff to make it thinner. So it has plenty of the overtones. Again, those Fender strings, that was the 150s were designed for the Telecaster and make it twangy. So it was designed for that. I don't know who makes them, if Fender made them. I don't think Fender had their own factory. Whoever made them, they were right. I've tried other strings, and they just don't have that response like that. And so this guitar, this is nines. And the reason I use nines on this is the scale determines, this feels a lot like the Les Paul. The Les Paul has tens on it.
Okay.
This with nines, they're similar in feel. So this one has the lighter gauge on it.
And what are 150s? Are they... They're nickel or a nickel? Are they pure nickel or are they a kind of a composite?
I think they're nickel, pure nickel. It's in the case outside. There's a spare set.
I love pure nickel sets. I've never really played so much with
them. This is the only string that gets it. Now, I've used, when playing in the band, we always couldn't find them all the time, so I would use D'Addario's. And when I first used nines on the Les Paul, I used Slinkies for a while too, and they were okay. But I love the response of these. When I started getting into squealing and, you know, when you have the amps turned up, they really respond. So and also, too, these strings have a weird harmonic structure when you play them. When you have the amp cranked up a lot and you're getting feedback, it gets more different harmonics. There is a difference. Hmm. So, but this became my main studio act.
Did you say, Jeff, that the fretboard was ebony?
Yeah. It's an ebony.
That's pretty unusual.
I think this is a Warmoth. I'm not sure. I think this was.
That would make sense.
And that would probably.
It's not a Fender neck.
That would probably enhance the brightness too, because ebony is usually pretty bright.
Well, actually, I thought it sounded darker than some of the other guitars that I had played. But again, it's so unique, it's hard to tell. But it does a lot of stuff. It gets a nice sound, and This I did a lot of sessions with this one too.
If it's an 80s and it's Warmoth and it's ebony, it's probably 10 to 16 compound radius because that's what they.
It is.
That's
a Warmoth.
It isn't compound.
It's a B style. It's a real B style. Different feel.
Well, Warmoth was doing custom stuff. I just don't know how that relates to when this was.
I think it was a Warmoth. I keep forgetting what he told me what it was, but he, my friend bought it for me, and I was able to put this guitar together. But this guitar has been through a lot, too. This one is I use this for a lot of different sessions. It's really versatile. I mean, I can do a lot of stuff with it.
So speaking of sessions, the intro, for the All About Guitar intro, can we go through some of the guitars? How did you get a lot of those sounds?
The opening guitar, when I just start, is an Ovation Classical.
Okay.
And that's using the pickup. That's what that guitar is.
Direct
into the studio, and then it's reverbed. There's another one where there's a double lead. That's actually my Jaguar, straight through the board. Again, I learned a lot. We were experimenting a lot in the studio where I could actually get the Fender sound direct. They didn't like using the amps all the time, so they would bring me in the studio room. Okay. And we would play with the EQ, so I got that Fender sound basically directly by boosting the upper, like 1K, 3K around there. We'd play around with that. So that guitar, that was an accident, actually. Okay. I was playing a lead, and they said, do it again. and then they play both of them together, and it like kind of worked. So they just like edited it together. So that was a
all right.
That was the other one, and then the Leslie guitar is the Les Paul.
Okay.
Through my it's a same as the Fender Leslie. It's a single 110, but I changed the speaker out. It has a full length. The original Fender Leslie, mine's a quarter box, which was part of my organ accordion setup with my brother.
Okay.
And it was a mid-range speaker, so it was meant to plug into your system, and it would send the mid-range to the Leslie. But if you're using another amp, your lows and highs would be through the regular amp. So we bypassed all of that, put an Altec 10 that's 75 watts, so I could put a bassman through that cranked,
okay,
and no problem. And that amp was basically, that one was a bassman, that guitar with the Les Paul, about like 4 or 5. So it's just breaking up a little bit, and that was just the Altec. That Altec's a great speaker, but it's loud.
That'll push a lot of air.
Yeah. And then the 12 strings, that was another session. There's a Rickenbacker 12 string direct, so it's kind of tingly. And then my, I think it was my Guild 12 string that's playing the other one. And I used to do a lot of sessions doing doubling 12 strings. So I would use a Guild one F112 that was from the 60s.
Okay.
And I used a Giannini Craviola, which I got when I went with my dad to Brazil. And that those two guitars really work well together, so I would double those all the time. So that was that one.
Okay.
And the bass on that one was, I think, the Rickenbacker. I was playing that. And
what model was the Rickenbacker? Was it
4001. 4001 is the... It's an older one. I got it from the... I got to go to the factory and pick it.
Ooh.
So my dad, we knew a guy in San Francisco that owned a music store. So that's how I was scamming all the time. I would call him up, hey, like, I really want this pedal. Tell my dad. He's like, yeah, your son really needs this pedal. It's very good. You know, so my dad would bring it down. So I was like, I was a total schemer, you know.
Perfect.
So I still have that fuzz tone. When my dad heard me play it, he's like, oh my God.
What have I done?
Yes. Why did I waste this money?
Well, yeah, and people got to remember too that there just weren't a lot of pedals at that time to be had. There was a Fuzz Face, Univibe, Wah, Color Sound.
Yeah. But the 60s, there was the Maestro Fuzz Tone.
That was it.
Which most people know is the Satisfaction from the Stones. That was that sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the late 60s, 69 or 60, 67 to 69 is when the... there was one pedal, the Range Master. That was the next thing that came out. We didn't see too many of them here yet because they were just in Britain and there wasn't as much distribution of them. Then the Fuzz Face. And the Vox Wah was on the other effect. And at that time, they just came out with the Maestro Phase Shifter. That was the first
three,
phase shifter.
With the three?
So it duplicated a Leslie. It was supposed to be a Leslie simulator.
Those are great.
They're great because it does the breaking with the Leslie.
When you saw and heard your first Marshall, did you embrace it or did you fear it or both?
Well, the thing that really got me into Marshall was, and I remember when you were knee-high to a grasshopper, I showed you that, was Rockin' the Fillmore. That's one of the classic tones. I have now, there's two albums that have the classic Marshall tone. First is Rockin' the Fillmore. Peter Frampton, Steve Marriott, 100 watt half stacks just cranked, and it's just a great sound. The second one now, I have to admit, is Steve's album Live Bullets.
That thing,
he's using those silver Marshalls and he's using ES-335 and the feedback that he gets. Now, he doesn't use a whammy bar or anything, but he's just doing them. It's just that tone. It's
Jubilee?
That
tone.
It was a silver Jubilee with 25 watt Celestians, and I would just run everything on 7. 7. 7-7-7. Well, for no particular significance. Okay, if we're getting in, going down there at that road, no. And I virtually didn't touch the controls, you know, no matter what the venue. And thanks,
Jeff. He was getting tone. He was getting, it's something, you can, I think you can download the MP3s.
Yes.
They're up on like Amazon and iTunes. The album's out of print, but the MP3s will show you what I'm talking about. I recommend it. It's really good.
Cool.
But I didn't have Marshalls for a long time because I had the Fenders. That's pretty much what was around here. Marshalls were hard to get in the early 60s. And then there was the voltage problem, too, because they were 220. They didn't make 110s at that time. I know Fender made 220s to ship to Europe, but they weren't switchable like they are now. You can take any amp anywhere now and pretty much have the voltage.
We have some friends here in the studio that have known Jeff for a long time, too, and I can disclose to them and our friends here who are also here that Jeff owns an amp that I covet. He's got this Bandmaster. He's got a great deluxe that I had that I've played through and had a good time with, but he has a 68 Bassman head that is an A165 circuit that's been slightly modified, and anything you put through that amp is stunning. It's such a great Fender bluesy, and I've been reading on that circuit recently because there was a transition from 66 to 68.
Yeah, the blackface electronics.
It has the blackface mod. That's the thing to bring in a little older.
It's blackface, so. Even though it's a silver face, and it has the little aluminum trim.
Exactly. I've been reading all about this lately.
And
that's the same amp that
Dickie Betts first used. Mm-hmm. He used one of those before he went to the Showmans, and then he went to the Marshalls.
You can cover a lot of ground with all those amps.
Mm. But basically, the early Marshalls were a copy of a basement that was basically a basement circuit. So it's an interesting amp, and I forgot where we got that. I think we got that on the Penny Saver or something. We found that thing for a couple hundred bucks or something like that. It was amazing. It's a great amp. It is a great amp.
Wow. The first Marshall. When did you get the first?
Actually, the first Marshall I had was the little tiny ones that actually were Marshalls. I don't have. Oh, I have one Marshall.
Okay.
Wait a minute. This little guy here, this MG15 that I leave in the studio. I have two MG mini stacks that I use to test the stereo system. That's this, so I can turn it up at low volume and see if the, extra gain. I have a Class 5. But the amps that I have that are Marshall are a Surreal that I won at the amp show. That's a great, it's like a JTM 50. And then I have another one, a Chupacabra. 50 watt. That's basically a Plexi with a treble boost in it.
That's the Italian company?
No, I think it's made in like Indonesia or something. Okay. It's a knockoff, but it's pretty well done. The guitar, my friend that sold it to me, he really did some custom wiring to it.
In these last 15 minutes, we want to check out those two other guitars, but in the meantime, there was a point I wanted to make that we alluded to in the first show that we did back in 2015 and clarify the thought a little more. One of the things that I think is so interesting about your approach is that it's informed as much by the Beatles and Johnny Winter as it might be by Jerry Goldsmith or Paul Marriott or any of a number of different 60s and 70s guys. So there's the notion of playing as a guitar player and developing your speed, doing all that kind of stuff, and playing as a musician where you're learning where your tones will fit inside a mix and knowing what to do with your kick drum, knowing what to do with your bass. And that's what I'm always struck by when I hear the things that you have done, is that you're always crafting your guitar parts to fit into the whatever mode that you're going to be working in, to really get it to fit right. That's part of what happens with the mods here, and that's a nice segue into what exactly you put into this Epiphone.
Well, let me just say, one of the things that's important, and one that I learned with orchestration and listening to bigger bands, the key is you have to listen to what everybody's doing, and then you can figure out where you fit in it. And this is especially true in recording, because a lot of times they would call me in to layer guitars, and it's already a thick mix already. So you have to figure out how to do that. So like one trick, example with acoustic guitars, rather than play one guitar finger picking, let's say I'm finger picking something on my acoustic. If it's just, it's recorded mono, I play one track, they have to turn that up loud to be heard. Now the trick is I double that part and pan it hard left, hard right. You don't have to turn it up as much, and it'll still be there. It'll set in the pocket. Also, too, is how you EQ it and what you're playing. A lot of times I would be called in to play multiple 12-string parts. I would play a simple part and put something on top of it, and they would mix it together, and it sounded like this amazing guitar part. So a lot of times you can break it out and double it or overdub to make it sound fuller.
That's something I learned from you, actually, is that when you're going to do the stereo thing and make it really tinkly, it's you're not going to play it exactly the same way each time. So those disparities, even though it's exactly the same part, grab the ear and widen, not only widen the stereo field, but grab the ear. And it's like, oh, there's a little bit of a difference. And you hear it almost like psychoacoustically. You hear it, but it has this effect of like, wow, there's two different things going on here, but they're almost perfectly in union.
So, listening to orchestration, a lot of times when I jam in solo, I'm not really listening to guitar lines. I might emulate a flute line or emulate a string line, and it gives it a different feel sometimes. Now, this guitar is one of the recent ones I did. This is an Epiphone, Chinese-made Epiphone guitar. And what I did to this one is put the Bigsby on. This is, you'll see this bridge on the telly too. This is a shallower bridge. And the cool thing about this bridge is basically, besides adjusting for harmonics this way, you can also adjust the width. So you can actually make them sit over these pickups. These are Aero pickups. My friend Larry makes these in Hawaii. These are special pickups because they have a third coil in them. So when I split them, there's no gain loss. It has the same output as the humbucker. Whereas mostly when you do split coils, you lose gain. So, and then he actually asked, this was done by Joel Grant, put this together for me, but he actually had Joel measure these string spacings so the poles fit right over that. He was very picky about that. This is a Duraline nut, so it's self-lubricating for the Bigsby.
Okay.
And then I have push-pull switches here in the volume to make it single coil or full humbucker. So this guitar basically gives me, I wanted to get a semi-hollow, partly because of Steve, because he gets great feedback out of his 335. So this guitar feeds back earlier. Even though the pickups are feedback resistant, the body moves. So when you play this in a loud amp, it'll just go and you can control it. But the push-pull gives me the option of being able to have a humbucker sound, but also I can go to like a P90 sound. So here is with the pickup split. Humbucker. Now just. Single coil on the neck pickup.
Wow.
So it gets playing, and I'm not even using the overdrive. And we're not loud. This Dan amp isn't that loud. It's just the gain stage on the Solo Dallas. So it's got plenty of power. So basically, in a single guitar, I can have the P90 sound, so I can get that kind of attack, that real bright sound. And at the same time, I can get the full humbucker sound. The humbucker is voiced like a PAF. So, all right, let me pull out the last. How much time do we have?
It's 8:43 right now.
Okay.
So Aero pickups.
Aero. A-E-R-O. And it's my friend Larry, tell him I said.
We got to talk about those.
You don't know by chance what the ratings are on those, do you?
What do you mean?
The
output, yeah.
I don't know, but I do know that we had to change some of the caps on the pots, because it's a different, because of the way it's wired, the way the output of it.
So many things to know. So many things to do. I've been considering doing a humbucker thing for the Strat, and they talk about that you have to change the pot from 250 to 500 so that you retain. There's so many of these little things that you have to know.
The Aero is nice because it gives you a little bit of both. It's kind of like a P90 when it's in the single coil, but the fact that it doesn't lose any gain is scary sometimes. I have to get used to it. So I'm so used to them losing.
Yeah.
That thing doesn't lose anything. It still drives the pedals. Now, this is, I did this a few years ago. This is my Tele. I built this from parts. This is a guitar fetish body. It's Paulina, which is like a mahogany. And it's really, really light. The heaviness is now with the Bigsby. And in fact, Joel, who put it together for me, was really concerned because with this neck, which is a Mosley graphite neck with stainless steel frets, it was top heavy. But once we put the
Bigsby, it balances back out.
It's perfect.
Is it regular bodies or chambered or what the bodies?
No, it's a full solid body.
Full solid body, okay.
And these are Zex coil pickups. So each one's wound and it's pretty quiet. It's not too, actually, it's on right now, full blast. It's pretty quiet. So I wanted a Tele, but it's a little darker than the normal Tele. But it's got plenty of top end. And they're stainless steel frets. Amazing, because it's this guitar right now. I'm probably going to put Severez explosions on this to get more squeal out of it, but right now there's these pyramid strings are made in Germany, and these are tens, but they feel like nines. So
I love pyramids.
Pyramids, all right.
So if I this one,
we got to talk about strings.
This has the Schaller bridge, and then I put the Fender Bigsby on it because it fits easier. It doesn't have that little thing there.
Yeah.
So I put that in there. But these pickups are great. They're really if you don't know by now, I like to squeal. But it's a really nice neck.
Ladies, he is single. Just so you know.
It's.
But really, he does squeal.
I do squeal a lot.
Enjoy that. That's a,
but it's a really it's a real well balanced guitar, and it plays. I wanted to put the tens on it because I would use it a lot for rhythm. But I don't know. I'm debating whether I should go to a 9 or not to bend more. It depends if I play more leads on it. But it's got a nice tone. So it's nice. It's a great little guitar. But I love this this neck. It's graphite and it's real stable.
And the stainless steel never wears out. Do you find it harder on your fingers?
No, it's easier.
Good, those frets, yeah.
That's pretty nice.
It's got tone, so it's a great little guitar, but totally from parts.
Sweet.
So it's totally maxed up.
It has a little acoustic quality to it, too.
That's what I was wondering.
It's a light body. This maple laminate on the top is very thin, so it's not really affecting the guitar that much. It doesn't really... it's not making that much of a difference. But this guitar, it is very light. You can feel it when you play. Mm. So it's resonating. And then probably with this graphite neck, which is so solid, it's probably sending more vibration into the body because it's glass, basically. This is a glass. This has a Duraline nut, and the string trees are graphite too. So they're kind of glass, so they move pretty easily. So... the Duraline I recommend because it's self-lubricating and it makes it easier. On the Les Paul, I still take my number 2 pencil and go in there with the graphite so to keep it smooth. So, but this guitar, it's a really nice guitar. It's fun to play. It's a great one. So,
And who built that for you, Jeff?
Joel Grant did all of these.
Okay.
He's over, I think, in Dardena. You can look him up. He's up on the internet. Garden and I've Grove. Known him for a long time. Garden Grove?
Garden Grove.
Beautiful Garden Grove.
So he, he worked on all these guitars. He thought it was nuts, but it was, especially the 339. Like, why are you doing that? But it made a difference. So it's just, you know, I wanted to do a certain thing. This guitar I designed for live, so it's meant to be, so I don't have to change so much. So,
Aero pickups. Okay, very nice.
Oh, that's a whole other discussion to ask you guys about.
Well, Arrow's going to be coming on. He's in Hawaii, and it's been hard for him to come out here, but he is definitely coming out this year, so we'll have him on the show, and I'll invite you guys. He's known a lot for his bass pickups, but his guitar pickups are killer. These are nice pickups. So
it's about 850.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to make sure that everybody mentions what they're doing and how to get a hold of you guys. So go ahead.
Kathy.
Well, as before, I'm in a guitar player in Sister Skinner, one of the guitar players, and of course JP's lovely wife Lisa plays in our band, Lisa Carvey. But also, I run Tone Zone LA pedal boards.
Yes,
pedal boards.
Very much.
And I built Jeff's pedal board, his acoustic board, and this year I think we're the Florotron 2?
Florotron 3.
three, excuse me.
I have the 2 right now, and it's just a jumble of wires. So we have to clean it up. So, yes. No, she's, check her out, man. What she did, and we have a video of it. It's on the YouTube channel, too, of the what we did and how we designed it. Because that was one of the things I wanted to go through, is how you can approach your pedal board. I have patch points, so it's flexible. It doesn't, it's not fixed. I can actually add something anytime I want.
Change it.
She does fantastic work, guys. Check her out.
Awesome. For me, everything Steve Pfister, go to stevepfister.com. And we're playing, we're planning our Europe trip this year. Our tour should commence at the end of October and go through the middle of November.
Nice.
And that's for the band. And
new album?
The new record is out, and it's called Let It Slide. And it's available everywhere, and it's streaming, and, you know, go listen to it, and so we get our 1/100th of a penny per stream. But we're still making records, and we're still playing rock and roll, so that's it.
Steve will be back in a few weeks with Godin, because he uses Godin guitars, the Steve Pfister model.
Absolutely.
Are there any regional shows, local shows to check you out on?
Not currently, but there will be.
Okay, there will be, okay.
Yeah.
Good. And he's going to show us some this one guitar now he's been using for slide. He's using these special pickups. They're foil.
Gold foil.
The gold foil pickups.
Yeah, I want to try those. You'll have to check that. Foils. So he'll be back for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And JP, what are you guys doing?
Incendios starting 2020. That's great. Math was never my strong suit. We're starting this at the Coffee Gallery this coming Saturday, February 22nd, a 3 p.m. matinee show and a 7 p.m. Evening show. We're going to be at Spaghettini next month, which is almost already sold out. And then all the shows and then East Coast stuff this summer. So all of it, you can see at incendioband.com. I also urge everybody to, if you're not doing anything tomorrow night, come down to the Whiskey O'Gogo. It's going to be Musicians United against AB5. There's some very, very interesting and really rough stuff going on with this Assembly Bill 5 that people should know about, because it's ruining a lot of livelihoods and needs to be rectified. If you want to check more information on that, you can go to thehollywoodtimes.today. Lisa and I recently wrote an article on it that we just posted earlier today. You can also check Freelancers Against AB5 on Facebook, my personal site as well. You can check out what's going on and be aware of what's happening in the California legislature. It's very, very important that we modify this bill.
And I want to thank, they're off camera, but Danny Wolitz was an...
Yay, Danny! I haven't seen him.
Another guitar player from Whittier. I've known him since grammar school. And Ron Herbrand, he plays guitar, but I don't know if he plays professionally. But anyway, he was another grammar school. We've known each other for years. And then, of course, Doug back there, he's in the corner taking pictures.
Doug has a gig.
Doug?
We just promote Doug's gig.
Rewind Rockers will be playing at the Dana Point Festival of Wales on March 8th and also on March 15th from noon to 3.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, so Dana Point Whale Festival. Come on out.
He has a nice collection of basses.
Yes. Long overdue to see you play live, my friend.
All right. So thank you guys for putting me in the hot seat. It was kind of fun, though.
You seem to enjoy it.
I loved showing the guitars. I don't usually get a chance to.
Jeff, we just scratched the surface.
You're actually pretty good at it, Jeff.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Thanks. But anyway, this is some of the stuff that I've used over the years, and these are my main go-to guitars now for most of the sessions.
Now we need to show 3 next year sometime with the Rickenbacker, the Howard Roberts, and a few of your other delectable.
I don't have a Howard Roberts. I have a Barney Kessel.
Barney Kessel. I was confusing my jazz
Barney
greats.
Kessel will show up because we've been doing Gibson shows, and I should do a Rickenbacker show. Let's do.
That would be good.
I just have to figure out. I don't have all the models. I only have a few.
I'll bring a frying pan.
There you go.
It's just going to be a frying pan.
Okay. Anyway, we're out of time. Thank you, guys. It was really fun to have everybody
here.
Jeff.
Thank you, sir.
And you should think about a career in radio. You know what I'm saying? It's the Steve Fischer show. It's coming.
I have a face made for radio.
There you go. That's what
I said. See, he can say that because he's Steve Fischer.
But I'm glad JP did say that.
Yeah, because then it would have been unpleasant.
Thank you, fantastic, guys, for listening. And I thank you, all these guys, thanks, here, Jeff, joining me. We'll see you next week. We have more fun and frolic next week. And have a good week. Yeah.